Today we're reading from the seventh canto again, and we're reading text 31 and 32. So before we start that, I just want to put this in context for this chapter. So after Prahlad Maharaj told his father that the perfection of life was the nine processes of devotional service, what do you think happened?
He got really mad.
Yeah, his eyes became coppery. His lips were trembling. He was extremely angry, and his lips trembling spoke to the teacher. So he didn't think it was Prahlad's fault. He blamed the teacher first. He said, okay, so what have you been doing? You've been brainwashing my child, teaching him these poisonous thoughts about the enemy. And then the teacher, of course, went, no, it's not my, I didn't do anything. Don't blame me. Somehow he has this inside of him already, and it's just growing inside of him. He says, his spontaneous devotional service has naturally developed in him already. Therefore, please give up your anger and don't unnecessarily get angry at me or accuse me. So then when Hiranyakashipu heard that the teacher was saying, oh, it's not my fault, then he addressed his anger towards Prahlad. And he said, you rascal, you're the most fallen of our family. Where have you gotten your knowledge? Where have you gotten this? And it's interesting because Prahlad doesn't answer directly. He doesn't say, oh, my guru Narada Muni. He doesn't mention that. Previously also, when his teachers asked him, where did you get this? He never directly says Narada Muni. And it's actually smart that he doesn't, because knowing that they're demons, they would probably try to get Narada Muni in that way. So Prahlad Maharaj says, because of their uncontrolled senses, so this is in reply to, where did you get your knowledge? It's actually really funny. And then Prahlad says, because of their uncontrolled senses, persons too addicted to materialistic life make progress toward hellish conditions and repeatedly chew that which has already been chewed. So he's indirectly speaking about his father here. It's actually quite funny because his father is coming from that materialistic point of view. And their inclinations toward Krishna are never aroused, either by the instructions of others, by their own efforts, or by a combination of both. Then there's going to be the two verses that we're going to read. And then what happens, so he says two more verses to his father. And then Hiranyakashipu threw him off his lap, because first he was sitting on his lap and, tell me about your school day, like a nice father-son moment. And then he just threw him onto the ground. And that's when his eyes got really red and molten copper. And he told the teachers, you kill him as soon as possible. He deserves to be killed. So he went in, it's very interesting, within a few verses, he went from being super loving, even like crying. Do you remember that? He was, oh, Prahlad. He was like crying tears of affection. Like, tell me what you learned at school. And then a few verses later, he's throwing him down, telling the teachers to kill the kid. So that's how amazing that the power of that materialistic attitude of, like, it's all about me. So in one moment, you can switch your affection to your closest friends or your loved ones. And just like, it's not serving me, so get rid of it, that mentality. And Hiranyakashipu really embodied that to the ultimate degree. It kind of reminds me of, like in modern times, World War II and stuff, when families, they would sometimes kill their own family members if they were helping, people escape from the concentration camps and stuff. So even then, their loyalty to their country was greater than their family even. So then it goes into the description of, so the teachers first try to convince Prahlad, like, why are you, they ask him to, he doesn't really respond. Then they go into this description, the verses go into this description of all the ways that Prahlad was tried to be killed by his father. And particularly the demons, not the father directly, but his associates. And there must have been different kinds of demons, quote unquote demons. The demon race is described as having fearful faces, sharp teeth, and reddish coppery beards. I don't think they necessarily all looked like that, but the ones that were attacking Prahlad and they were like walking around him with tridents. He's like, chop him up and pierce him. Who here has seen a play of the Prahlad story? Yeah. Chindi Bindi, exactly. Yeah, we did. It's kind of the staple is on play. I was 9 years old when I was in the play, and I was Prahlad. So this part of the scene is really real to me because I was sitting there, and they were like, they had all these little kids dressed up as like really far out Rakshasas, exactly, Rakshasas. And they were walking around with these little, you know, plastic spears and tridents and stuff. And they were, Chindi Bindi, chop him up and pierce him. And I was just, you know, doing the chanting part. So that always, it'll always be really remain in my mind like that. So Prahlad was very sober no matter what was happening to him. Then they took him, they threw him onto rocks. They tried to poison him. They threw him into a pit of snakes. I always wonder why they had a pit of snakes, but I don't know. There's pits of snakes in those days, and they threw them in. So, yeah, there was, they tried to conjure up illusory tricks. They actually threw stones at him to crush him. They threw him at the feet of elephants. And among huge, fearful snakes. And then, of course, we all know that painting where they threw him off of a cliff. Here it says from the top of a hill. And even in the painting, he just looks, he's like falling, but he looks so serene, just like, you know, praying, and he wasn't disturbed by anything. So then, instead of Prahlad Maharaj getting afraid, guess who got afraid? Hiranyakashipu, which is very funny because the material condition of life makes us very fearful. And Prabhupada said, of the four activities of life, fearing is the greatest, is the one that causes the most distress, the most absorption in this world, is that fearing, defensive mood. And so rather than Prahlad developing that because he was taking shelter of Krishna, Hiranyakashipu started becoming afraid that he couldn't kill his son. Making him scared. Who does that remind you of in another pastime? Which demon was becoming really afraid? Kamsa, yeah. And Ravana, yeah. I'm sure they're all getting scared. Hiranyakashipu made this comment, like, Prahlad is like the tail of a dog. No matter how much I try to straighten it out, it keeps curling back. So, and then he thought, well, I can see that this boy's strength is unlimited, for he has not feared any of my punishments. He appears immortal. Therefore, because of my enmity toward him, I shall die. Or maybe this will not take place. He's going between his mind, he's getting scared. Then the two teachers try to encourage him. Don't worry. We'll take care of things. We'll teach him again. He's just really young, and by the time he gets older, he'll be basically brainwashed our way. And so they kind of consoled Hiranyakashipu, and they took him back into the school. So like, okay, everything's good. Let's go back teaching him again. So he joined his classmates, and that's where the chapter ends. And then the next chapter, it's going to be about Prahlad teaching his fellow students about the goal of life. Now we'll go back to 31 and 32. And after we do the verses, if you could pull up the bhajan, bhajahurimana. Okay. So verse 31, we'll read the English, and then 32 we'll do the Sanskrit. So when we're going through these, keep in mind that the first verse we're reading is the problem of material life, and the next one that we're going to read is Prahlad's solution to that problem. So that's how they fit together. And he's telling his father this, who really doesn't want to hear it, but these words are very very special to devotees. So we'll read the English for this one. Persons who are strongly entrapped by the consciousness of enjoying material life and who have therefore accepted as their leader or guru a similar blind man attached to external sense objects cannot understand that the goal of life is to return home back to Godhead and engage in the service of Lord Vishnu. As blind men guided by another blind man miss the right path and fall into a ditch, Materially attached men, led by another materially attached man, are bound by the ropes of fruitive labor, which are made of very strong cords. And they continue again and again in materialistic life, suffering the threefold miseries. And then Prabhupada, in this purport, he says that hereditary gurus, or spiritual masters, have been accepted everywhere since time immemorial. But Prahlad Maharaj declined to accept such a guru or take instruction from him. The family guru that he was part of, his family gurus. And then blind men may lead many other blind followers without true knowledge of material conditions, but they are not accepted by devotees like Prahlad Maharaj. Such blind teachers, being interested in the external material world, are always bound by the strong ropes of material nature. So in the verse also we heard about they're bound by the ropes of fruitive labor. So it's just our attachment to the enjoyment of our actions, right? So we're getting all attached to that, and it's binding us to this material world, that attachment to the results of our work. And that's why it's described as the ropes. And then because of that, we're suffering the threefold miseries. So it's interesting because Hiranyakashipu, remember I was saying earlier, he was suffering from his fear because he was trying to enjoy. He didn't want God to be part of the picture. He wanted to enjoy himself. And therefore, when Prahlad was threatening that, he became full of anxiety. And that's exactly what this verse is saying. When someone's bound by the ropes of wanting to enjoy themselves, separate from Krishna, and the results of their own actions, then they suffer those threefold miseries. So now let's go to the solution. So text 32. Unless they smear upon their bodies the dust of the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, completely freed from material contamination, persons very much inclined toward materialistic life cannot be attached to the lotus feet of the Lord, who is glorified for his uncommon activities. Only by becoming Krishna conscious and taking shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord in this way, which means taking shelter of a devotee, one can be freed from material contamination. So here's the solution. So this purport is long. We're going to read the second paragraph. In the verse, there's this word shelter. So the solution to the problem that we talked about, material life, right? So is taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. And this, actually, I like this word shelter. Sometimes we use the word surrender. And surrender can be a little bit of a more challenging word. But to take shelter of, I think we can all relate to that English phrase. When you take shelter of someone, then you don't have to worry about anything because they're taking care of things. And there's a couple of Sanskrit words I thought you might find this interesting. So you know how we study Sharanagati? So Sharana means shelter. Sharana. So Sharanam. So, you know, like in the last verse. Sarvadharma Pritya Mamikam Sharanam Raja, to take shelter of Krishna, right? So Sharana means shelter, and Agati, that's the long A, Agati, means coming forth, coming towards. So Sharanagati means coming for the shelter of, like coming towards the shelter of Krishna. So it's really an action of moving towards Krishna, of that. And then similarly, there's another word in when Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Yeyatamam Prapadyate, that's another one. He says, as devotees approach, as they surrender to me, the translation says, as they surrender to me, I reward them accordingly. So the Prapadyate, the literal translation of that, is pada, right? It's the verb of pada means foot, right? So pada means to move, like the feet are like the movers, the goers, to go, right? And then prapadyate, that means to approach or to go forward. Again, it means to move forward too. So we're moving towards Krishna. So when we say just surrender to Krishna, really what it means is that action inside of ourselves is moving towards Krishna, approaching him for shelter. And for me personally, I find that that works for me, that explanation of the words. It's surrender sometimes can mean in the like colloquial language, I guess surrender can be more of a something that happens to you, like surrender, and then you have to do it, and it's just, oh, I had to surrender because I had no other choice. But when we're seeking out Krishna, moving towards him, approaching him, it's actually from our own heart, our own initiative. We want to take shelter of Krishna. Sometimes my father has talked about that surrender word. He's described it as Krishna saying, approach me because I'm offering you sanctuary. It's a place where we can seek sanctuary. Krishna's offering it to us. So it's actually a really wonderful place where there's no fear. And like we could see, Prahlad Maharaj didn't have fear. He was fearless. This reminded me of when Prabhupada got initiated, he went from being Abhay to Abhay Charande, Abhay Charanaravinda. Became his initiated name. And that means fearless. Fearless having taken shelter of Krishna's feet. And it fits in perfectly with this, what we're talking about, is that Prabhupada also had that mood that Prahlad Maharaj had, where he, we all know, I think most of you read the Swami in a Strange Land book, right? So, you know, like when he arrived in America, it was that first winter, it was snowing, he was sitting on a bench, he didn't know where he was going to end up, this person sat next to him, and he said, yeah, the person said, are you alone, or something like that, and he said, no, I'm never alone, and actually there's hundreds of temples, and he had this vision of it that wasn't even manifest yet. But he had this fearlessness and this faith in his guru and in the holy name. And so his name, Abhay Charanaravinda, like A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, is actually really fitting for him. We never get a glimpse of Prabhupada being afraid. His personality, he was so trusting of Krishna's plan, just like Prahlad Maharaj. And there's this little, I got this little book, called the Vrindavan Bhajan. It's actually a poem Prabhupada wrote while he was in Vrindavan before he went to America. And he wrote it in Bengali, but this is the English translation. So there's this place where Prabhupada started writing the Bhagavatam. It's called the Radhadamodar Temple. And that's where he lived before he came to America. And it's in that place where he wrote this. And you'll see what I mean by his... He's showing exactly what we just read, that the material life is futile, and now he's just turning to Krishna. He says, I'm sitting alone in Vrindavan Dham. In this mood, I'm getting many realizations. I have my wife, sons, daughters, grandsons, everything, but I have no money, so they are a fruitless glory. Krishna has shown me the naked form of material nature. By his strength, it has all become tasteless to me today. He says, and he quotes Krishna, I gradually take away all the wealth of those upon whom I am merciful. He says, everyone has abandoned me, seen me as penniless. Wife, relatives, friends, brothers, everyone. This is misery, but it gives me a good laugh. I sit alone and laugh. In this Maya samsara, this illusory world, whom do I really love? Where have my loving father and mother gone to now? And where are all my elders who are my own folk? Who will give me news of them? Tell me who. All that is left of this family life is a list of names. And then it's really nice. He describes how, like the froth on the sea, water mixes again in the sea. So things are pulled apart from us in this world, together and back, like we're just thrown together. And so you can see where he was coming from. He was in that place of being all alone, no support materially. He was just writing, but he had that faith, and he had no fear. He's like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to go to America and follow my guru's order. And it's very ambitious, very, very amazing if you think about it. And when you go to Radhadamodar Temple and you sit in that room, that little tiny room with that latticed window, and you look out, you can see the courtyard of the samadhi or the kind of the tombstone of Rupa Goswami, and he looked out that window and he would pray from where he was sitting. And it's really amazing when you realize how he started in that condition, and then he didn't know that all this amazing, like all these temples everywhere, and just from his faith and his taking shelter of Krishna. I was thinking which bhajan most fits this class, and actually this one is amazingly, it fits every point that we've discussed. Prahlad Maharaj's, if we read the translation, let's scroll down to the translation. Oh mind, just worship the lotus feet of the son of Nanda. We can read it together. Which make one fearless, having obtained this rare human birth, cross over this ocean of worldly existence through the association of sacred persons. Both in the day and at night, I remain sleepless, suffering the pains of the heat or cold, the wind or the rain. For a fraction of flickering happiness, I have uselessly served wicked and miserly men. What assurance of real happiness is there in all of one's wealth, youthfulness, sons, and family members? This life is tottering like a drop of water on the lotus petal. Therefore, you should always serve and worship the divine feet of Lord Hari. It is the desire and great longing of Govinda Das to engage himself in the nine processes of bhakti, namely hearing the glories of Lord Hari and chanting those glories, constantly remembering him and offering prayers to him, serving the Lord's lotus feet, serving the Supreme Lord as a servant, worshipping him with flowers and incense and so forth, serving him as a friend, and completely offering the Lord one's very self. So as you sing it, you can think of these nine processes and which one resonates for you at this time. And because these are all ways of taking shelter of Krishna. They're different forms. Bhaja hure mana shri nanda mandana abhaya charanada.
Thank you.
the second line there. Abhayacharananda. So as when you go about your day today, just think of one way that you can take shelter of Krishna in a small way, in your own way. Thank you very much.
Thank you.